Dave and Darren's Top 5 Things podcast. That's what we're about to launch here. Glad you're here for it. My name is Dave. This is my partner, Darren, and these are the top 5 things we got done on our morning show at Planet 93.9.
The podcast is brought to you by Nature's Treatment of Illinois, Tech Drive in Milan, and West Main Street in Galesburg. You can order recreational items online now from the Galesburg location. That makes it easy. You can do that through Leafly by going to the website. That is ntillinois.com.
Getting started here with our first one.
Number one.
Story here of a middle-aged Polish gentleman who has failed his driving test for a record 192nd time.
I'm not that strong a driver.
This guy has been trying to pass. He's 50 years old. He's been trying to pass the driving test for 17 years.
What's he doing wrong? Is it a different thing every time? Must be.
Are there 50 things you can do wrong?
I don't know that there is. There's... And we're not looking at 50, 192 is what we're looking at. 192 things wrong.
He's 50 years old and unsuccessfully attempted to pass his driver's test the 192nd time. And by the way, that's a record. It seems like that would be a weird thing for them to even keep records of.
Maybe he's keeping track of it.
He has spent more than 6,000 zlotny in nearly 2 decades trying to pass the driving test.
34 years of futility.
This guy has been repeatedly failing what they call the theory test, which is mandatory in Poland before the practical exam. They say that...
So he hasn't even gotten the car? I haven't even made it to the car yet.
Is that the written test then? They call it the theory test. And they say the pass rate in Poland for the theory examination is anywhere between 50 and 60%. And for practical tests, it's below 40%. So it's not easy to pass the test for driving in Poland. And honestly, I would like to see numbers like that here.
Mm-hmm. But typically, you can knock it out in 2 or 3 tries.
You would think. The man has not been able to clear the theory exam. He hasn't even gotten into the where you get into the car part, which is preventing him from driving. They say the second worst driver in the city is another man who's attempted to pass the test 40 times. And there's a guy...
Now he's not even sniffing this cat.
There's a guy in Opel, which is a city located in the southern part of Poland. A guy has attempted the test 113 times. There is no bar on the number of attempts you can take to pass your driving test. And now that this guy has failed for the 192nd time, officials there in Poland are saying, you know, we should probably put a limit on the number of attempts you should get. Like, if you can't pass the test after, 100 times. Now, do you admire the guy for, like, his stick-to-itiveness? Can you tip your cap to this guy's unwavering optimism each time he takes it?
I really need to drive. My job is 30 miles away.
I'm a pizza delivery driver in a town 30 miles away.
Surely not again. Surely not again.
I mean, you have to have a certain hope to attempt something. Oftentimes, people will misattribute a quote that Albert Einstein said, that insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result. Mm-hmm. Einstein never said that, and that's not what the definition of insanity is. If you're trying something now for the 192nd time and you fail.
But he is looking for a different result.
Yeah, no, I get it. He doesn't think I'm going to fail, because otherwise, why would you pay to do this?
Does he have to pay every time?
In 2009, in South Korea, there was a woman who passed her driving exam on her 950th attempt.
I did it. When I stopped running over people, that's when they passed me.
Petra Kau Trubelansky, 50 years old. He's been attempting to pass this test for 17 years. This is the highest number of attempts ever recorded in Poland. It's possible someone has done it more.
He's taking it every month.
You would have to.
I mean, is that basically you can only take it once a month?
You would have to. 6,000 zlotny. Now, that's what money is in Poland. That's like close to $1,600 that he spent on the driving test.
So they are charging him every time.
Yeah, but not a lot. I mean, if you $1,600 divided by 200 attempts. This woman in South Korea failed to score the minimum 60 points out of 100 needed to attempt the actual driving test. So again, this is a case where it's the written test they're not passing, both of them. The woman in South Korea needed the license for her business and managed to pass the written exam on the 950th time. So he should feel good that he's not the worst in the world, just the worst in Poland.
Wow. Are these multiple choice tests? Because if they are...
Here's a story in the UK.
Just out of random dumb luck, you'd pass.
In the UK, there was a driver who passed his written test on the 158th attempt. 48-year-old man who had shelled out a lot of dough on written exams. When was the last time you even took a driver's test?
Oh, I don't know. Been a while. Like, I mean, I know that I've had to take one since I got my license. That seems like that was probably 30 years ago.
Right. Okay, I've been driving for 30 years. I think I've only taken the test once after I got my initial license.
I think that sounds about right.
And I feel like it was 20 questions, and they were durr questions.
Mm. Yeah.
Or it might have been, they said, you can take it immediately after because it's not uncommon to fail the first time. You can take it another time, right? Isn't that kind of how that works?
Well, I know I passed initially.
Yeah.
With the help of your good people out in Aledo, Illinois.
Oh, yeah?
Thank you.
Is that right?
Yeah. Well, that was the talk at the time, that it was easier to pass out there than it was to pass in Rock Island. I don't know that was true at all, but...
Here's the Iowa driver's license.
I went with that fable.
Here's the Iowa driver's license practice test. Let's see how you do on this. When driving on gravel or dirt roads, mm-hmm. A, your tires can grip the road better than on pavement. B, your tires do not have as much traction, so you must drive slower. Or C, visibility is better.
I would say it's probably B.
I mean,
being that the other two don't make any sense. Is that how the rest of the test is going to go?
Here's another one from the Iowa driver's license practice test. If you're traveling on a 2 or 3 lane road and meet a stopped school bus with its red lights flashing,
uh-huh.
You must A, stop.
Gun it.
A, stop and proceed after a few seconds.
Uh-huh.
B, stop only if children are crossing the roadway.
Uh-huh.
C, stop and remain stopped until red lights stop flashing and the stop arm is withdrawn.
Well, again, only one answer makes any sense. So I'll go with C.
Maybe the Polish test is too tough, but maybe ours is too easy.
It could be.
Because... Don't run over children, and visibility isn't better on a gravel road. Seems like pretty easy things to keep in mind. How often do you have to take it? I have no idea. I want to say, too, the last time I got my license renewed, it was renewed for like 12 years or something ridiculous.
I don't know about 12.
But... I'm telling you, whatever the number is on my license, I thought, I don't know if I'll make it to that. That's so far in the future. Two. They've done a study, and if you're somebody who wears logos on your shirt, particularly if you are a man who wears a large logo on your shirt, it turns out that people make judgments about you. If you wear shirts with
large logos
on them, you are perceived to be, according to this study this psychologist has concluded, you are perceived to be, if you're a man who wears a large logo on your shirt, you are perceived subconsciously. People can't even help it. They don't mean to make this judgment, but they do.
All right.
If you're walking around with a big logo on your shirt, people assume that you are, if you are a man, more promiscuous. Men who
some sort of playboy.
Yes. Very conspicuous, walking around with that big logo on your shirt. You're seen as being more promiscuous, also less trustworthy and reliable, according to this.
Now, do you see my logo?
Yours is very small. Yeah.
A logo over here.
You're not promiscuous. You're more trustworthy and reliable.
A real playboy.
Well, that's what Larry thinks about you. The theory that this psychologist had was that audacious displays of wealth, like if it's a large luxury product logo, that's enticing because it signals a man's economic power and ability to invest in your offspring's future.
Well, yeah, but
this is just like being a peacock, is what they're saying.
Who's walking around with a big giant Mercedes t-shirt?
Guys who are sluts is what I'm telling you. Or at least that's our perception. In humans, luxury displays are seen more as an indicator as one's investment in mating than in reproduction. That is to say, not looking to settle down and have offspring, but, you know, practicing.
Now, if you take a look at my logo, what it says is that I'm... what I like to be is provocative without being slutty.
Well, I think what your logo says, because he's wearing a sweatshirt from the Quad City River Bandits, I think what your logo says is you probably got that for free when you were working with the River Bandits.
I did not.
Or you got yourself a deal because you were in charge of merchandise.
I didn't get it for free.
Uh-huh.
But if you're asking if there was some sort of employee discount,
yeah,
perhaps.
I will only
commit to perhaps.
I'm very provocative, and I know how to push the limits and yet not come across as slutty.
Right. That's right. I push the limits is what I do.
This study was conducted by an evolutionary psychologist, Daniel Kruger of the University of Michigan. And he says here in this statement, rather than being a reliable and honest signal of future paternal investment, displays of luxury goods may sometimes represent investment in mate attraction, which is at the expense of future investment in offspring. I will try and explain that now in terms that you don't need to be an evolutionary psychologist to understand. If you're walking around as a dude with a bunch of bling, what you're saying is, hey, let's do it, but I'm not going to stick around, toots.
Although I do have a large steel logo on my hat.
Yeah, this isn't about hats, though. This is just about shirts.
About shirts, okay.
Luxury displays featuring exaggerated size, coloration, and sound indicate relatively greater investment in mating effort. Large luxury product logos enhance social competitiveness and mate attraction, whereas small logos enhance perceptions of trustworthiness and reliability. I guess what I'm telling you is, if you're a dude and you're looking to get it, walk around with a big logo. If you're a dude and you're looking to settle down, maybe ramp in the logo size.
What about, do they talk about rings? If I'm wearing rings on my fingers,
well, yeah,
that aren't on my ring finger. If I've got rings on all my fingers except for my ring finger, what does that say?
That's an interesting look.
It really is.
376 students were shown a polo shirt with a Ralph Lauren polo brand logo printed on the left breast, right? In either a large size or a small size. And they were asked to imagine the man who owned the shirt. So it's a polo shirt, and in one it just looks like a normal polo shirt, and the other they've exaggerated the size of the guy on the horse.
Well, no, they haven't exaggerated.
Do they make them both?
They make it with that big logo.
Really?
Yeah.
I guess it's been 30 years since I've worn a polo shirt. And frankly, the only reason I wore a polo shirt was I was trying to attract a mate, if I'm being honest. They asked them to rate about these shirts. Imagine the guy who wears this shirt and that shirt on a scale of 1 to 100. With the effort that he puts into both mating and parental investment.
What about colognes?
These include things like flirts often and knowingly hits on someone else's partner, good at taking care of children, devotes resources to supporting the family. And when they saw the large logo, they thought, well, that guy's a player. And when they saw the small logo, they thought, that's obviously a family man. People imagine the man who owned the shirt with the larger logo was more invested in mating and less in becoming a parent.
Hitting on other people's partners.
That's one of the things they scored high on. If you're walking around with a large logo on, the signal you're saying is, I'm here for everybody. I'm gonna hit on your girl you and see your this, girl and your girl.
You see this big mallet that's in the polo logo? I'm going to use that on your head. And take your partner.
Men said they would be more likely to wear the shirt with the larger logo in a situation where they were competing for social dominance. I wish I put this much thought into what I wear.
It's just a White Sox logo. Right.
Men said they would be more likely to wear the smaller logo shirt when attending a casual dress job interview or meeting their partner's parents for the first time.
Gonna pull a power move on dad. I might hit on your mom. I'm not saying I won't.
Might seduce your mom.
We've been going out for 9 months. I'm gonna hit on your mom.
What do you think of that?
What do you think of that?
That's right.
How long did you say your parents have been married? Not long enough.
I'm taking your daughter out for a date, and when we're done, I'm coming back for your old lady. That's what this giant man on a horse says.
That's what this means. I don't know what this White Sox logo means or what this brewery means here, but it's intimidating. I'll say that.
It's nice to meet you, sir. I'll try and have her home before 10 o'clock. Oh, are you noticing the giant logo on my shirt? Pretty good chance I'm going to sneak in the middle of the night and bang your wife.
And take your wife. Yeah. If I don't have her back by 10, start without me. Okay?
I'll be here to close on the deal.
And yeah, I do have rings on all my fingers and my thumbs, except for my ring finger. Get it?
It's a vibe.
It's a vibe I'm putting out there.
Number three.
Taco Bell's sauce packets.
Yes.
Which I don't ever use when I don't.
You don't need a sauce?
I don't put any sauce on my tacos generally. There are, let's see, mild, hot, and Diablo and fire. Those are the available sauces. Does that check out?
Mm-hmm.
They have announced, the people at Taco Bell, that they are partnering with a recycling company to give the sauce packets a spicier second life that doesn't involve a landfill. They are recycling and reusing the sauce packets.
Now, when I saw this headline and it said going to be reusing their sauce packets,
right.
The first thing I thought was...
Refilling sauce packets that somebody emptied?
No, not refilling.
Because no thanks.
No, not refilling them, but anybody... This would have to be, of course, anyone who dines in at Taco Bell.
Right.
If you go and grab some Taco Bell hot sauce packets and then you bring them to the table and you don't use them all.
Yeah.
At that point, the good people at Taco Bell would swoop in and say, there's nothing wrong with this unopened packet. This packet's going to get a second chance.
You would have
you
to
grab a handful. You grab six taco packets or hot sauce packets.
Yes.
You only use four.
Can we offer you some taco sauce packets or some gently used taco sauce packets.
These were never used.
They use, Taco Bell says here, they use more than 8 billion sauce packets every year in the United States. That's a lot, which works out to about 710 million metric tons of plastic that would pollute the environment by the year 2040. If they don't do something,
okay, so again,
and do something fast.
These are things
this is only going to work, obviously, for in-store stuff.
Well, they don't really give any details on how this program will work.
Because they're not going to hunt me down after I've gone through the drive-thru and said, hey,
Darren,
what did you do with those packets?
Did you use all of them?
Did you use them all?
Well, no, I like to have the extra packets for when I make my own tacos. No, no, no. That taco sauce is licensed only for our tacos. How dare you? They reveal that the pilot program, a recycling pilot program, will launch later on this year. And they say participation will be simple and it will involve free shipping. And the ultimate goal is for discarded sauce packets to have an exciting future as something totally new. My wife has one of those Nespresso machines.
Uh-huh.
And the gimmick is you put a little pod in and it makes her coffee or whatever. And what she does is all the stuff comes out of the pod, you got this big piece of plastic. She saves all of them. And then the people at Nespresso will mail you a envelope, which you then can take to the UPS store and you ship it back to them. And then they reuse the plastic somehow. Ooh. So you don't feel bad about putting all that stuff in the landfill. Although, I mean, you are still polluting. I mean, they still have to, there's still carbon that's expelled by picking up a package and shipping it back to wherever it goes, right? I mean, it's not like no harm, no foul. I guess it's less harm. See, that you're doing. The idea then would be that you would be collecting the sauce packets, maybe, like the sauce packets you take home.
I could bring those back to the store, maybe?
They're going to have like a separate box for you to just put sauce packets in. And are we trusting the Taco Bell going public to sort things appropriately? Or is that going to be someone's job at the Taco Bell?
That could be someone's job.
Pick out all of the sauce packets?
Uh-huh. Put me in, Coach. My buddy Soul Stash repurposes uses the Diablo sauce in a different way.
Oh, yeah?
He uses the Diablo sauce not necessarily on the Taco Bell items, mm-hmm. but he will take the Diablo sauce and use it on the Hardee's Frisco Angus burger.
Okay.
And has found that there is a certain synchronicity.
Really?
Works. Yes. That the Taco Bell Diablo sauce, uh-huh. hot sauce, works well on the Frisco Angus burger.
Let me have a Diablo sandwich, a Dr. Pepper, and make it fast. I'm in a goddamn hurry.
Nice lady.
How about some hush puppies?
We don't have time for that. So the idea then would be that they take these Taco Bell sauce packets and then melt them down and remold them into a hard plastic. So maybe they make the seats of the Taco Bell out of sauce packets. That's not bad.
Or statues out front of all the Taco Bells.
Ooh, what if they had like a moldorama like you used to get at the zoo? And they use the plastic from the packets to make little taco statues you can bring home. I like that.
I would like a wax rendition of, what was the name of the Taco Bell dog?
The Chihuahua?
Yeah, the Chihuahua.
Well, they kind of have moved away from that campaign. It was a little problematic. Taco Bell doesn't really have, like, there's not like a Colonel Sanders. Glenn Bell is the guy who founded Taco Bell. The guy's name was Glenn Bell. That's why it's Taco Bell. But they've never really done anything to
I'm Taco Bell.
You want to know who Taco Bell is? Me. I'm Glenn. He had a hot dog stand called Bell's Drive-In in San Bernardino, California. The year was 1948. And he's at the hot dog stand when he notices across the street there's a Mexican restaurant and there's a line that's like going across the street, people waiting to go in to this Mexican restaurant.
There's no line here at my hot dog stand.
No. No, so he reverse engineered the recipe for tacos. Eventually, the owners of the Mexican restaurant let him come in and see how tacos were made. So in 51, he opens the first Taco Tia through El Taco and then calls it Taco Bell. That was the third name of the taco place, and that one stuck. Why don't I just name it after myself? 1978, Pepsi buys Taco Bell from Glenn Bell. And the rest was history.
I think that Taco Bell that was up by Hotel Moline,
mm-hmm.
I think that was the first one in the Quad Cities. It's not a Taco Bell anymore. It's an Indian restaurant.
Oh, yeah, I know the one.
I think that was the first one.
Right. How many Taco Bells are there?
A lot.
In the Quad Cities?
Well, on this side, what do we have?
I know there's one in there's one on Elmore, and there's one on like Locust. Middle Road, and there's one on Locust. Yeah. No doubt there's one at the world's largest truck stop, of course.
That is true.
So that's just this side of the river. I like the idea of getting like a plastic taco you could take home as like a little memento of your visit to Taco.
Great, making love out of nothing at all.
And you just have that smell of melted plastic.
Where
do
you think
along.
You're going with that plastic taco?
What? It's made out of sauce packets. I'm saving the earth.
Number four.
The PGA announcing a bonus structure. $40 million in bonuses going to players. And you will earn your bonus money as a player based on your likability and fan engagement. PGA Tour creating a lucrative bonus structure that will reward golf's biggest stars. Doesn't matter how you do on the course. If people like you, you get more money. The new system designed to compensate players who are judged to drive fan and sponsor engagement. So your Ricky Fowlers, your Tiger Woods, your Bryson DeChambeaus. It's known as the Player Impact Program. This is a direct response to Premier Golf League, a proposed splinter tour that the Saudis are trying to launch. They want to lure away golf's biggest names with the promise of a massive guaranteed payday. The Premier Golf League has spent years trying to gain traction. But, I mean, listen, you're not going to take... Are you going to take away the superstars of the PGA for the PGL? Money talks, right?
This is what I would do.
Yeah.
If I was one of those players.
Mm-hmm.
You know those little hard candies, the root beers that look like barrels?
Yeah, they're called root beer barrels.
I would pass those out.
Here you go. Here's some hard candy to suck on.
I've got these... look at these pants I'm wearing.
I got some of these Werther's Naturals. Enjoy.
I've got 1,000 of those things in my pants.
Walking around with a bunch of candy pants.
Uh-huh, I'm a candy pants guy.
The Player Impact Program began on January 1st to recognize and reward players who positively move the needle. At the end of the year, they got a pool of $40 million, and they will distribute it among 10 players.
10?
The most valuable player gets $8 million. And then there's like a sliding
score. Everybody gets it for just trying?
No.
Now, what about getting docked if you're like,
well, that's
people
it.
Hate you?
Yeah, like if you beat a guy to death with a 9-iron, that's going to hurt
every
your
tournament.
It's going to hurt your score.
Every tournament, you end up killing somebody.
The top 10 beneficiaries will be determined based on an impact score. That is a number generated from 6 separate metrics designed to quantify the added value you bring to the game of golf.
Can you quantify that?
Here's some of the metrics. One, your position on the season-ending FedEx Cup points list. So how well you do weigh in. But also, number two, your popularity in Google searches.
Mm.
Now, like a lot of people are Googling Tiger Woods to see like, what happened during the accident? Was he speeding?
Yeah.
Who's he? Which Perkins waitress is he with nowadays?
I think it was Denny's.
No, it was a Perkins.
Was it Perkins?
I feel like it was a Perkins.
Okay.
You think it was a Denny's?
It might have been Perkins.
I think the joke is Denny's, but
yes,
I think it was actually...
The joke might be Denny's.
Yes.
So it might have been a Perkins.
You're also graded on your Nielsen brand exposure rating, which places a value on the exposure a player delivers to sponsors. There's also something called a Q rating. Q Q ratings are something they used to do here in the Quad Cities. And did you ever find out what your Q rating was?
I don't think I ever rose to the level of a Q rating.
Okay.
But Q rating is basically, do people know you and do they think positively of you?
Are they aware of you and do they have a positive association with your name?
Yes.
And at least when I had looked over the data, I had a pretty decent Q rating.
Mm.
But like Paula Sands has the highest Q rating of all time.
Well, that's not fair.
And I found out what my Q rating was over there at Brady Street. And they were furious because that wasn't something I was supposed to know about.
Mm.
And I said, well, if it's about me, why wouldn't I know about it? And they said, well, because you might think that you could ask for more money.
Well, yes.
And well,
I might use that as a tool.
Yes. Well, wouldn't you want to pay me more money if you think I have a high Q rating? You're fired. Get out of my office. There's also something called an MVP index rating, which calibrates the value of the engagement a player drives across social and digital channels. Also, meltwater mentions, how much you're getting, you know, how much heat you're getting in the media.
Heat?
The tour will employ an algorithm to turn these values into impact scores for every player. And then a ranking of those scores determines how much of this $40 million bonus you're due. The FedEx Cup rank is the only measurement that is determined by your performance on the golf course. You got six metrics. How you doing the golf course is only one of the six numbers.
You're not going to be able to concentrate on golf.
It's a popularity contest, is what it is, for $40 million. There have always been golfers who people, for whatever reason, and more often than not, I think it's golfers that you think, oh, that guy reminds me of a buddy, or he seems like me.
Well, I mean, they had Arnie's Army.
And that was because Arnold Palmer just looked like a dude that...
People liked Arnold Palmer.
Right. So Arnold Palmer...
They enjoy lemonade and iced tea.
Right.
Thank you for this.
What's his name? The big fatso drunk guy.
John Daly.
They go nuts for him. He's not great on the golf course.
Not the greatest card player.
No.
I'm all in every time. Every hand.
We were, Darren and I
saw
were
saw that in person.
Darren and I were at a party once, and John Daly was there in the basement playing cards, and
all in every hand.
He was all in every hand, which
he was hitting driver on every hand.
It was something else. It was something else. They were happy to take his.
Oh
money.
Yeah, no, they loved having him there.
He had a good time too.
We all had a good time.
Everyone had fun. Every once in a while, I'd go into that room and watch John Daly just throw money away. I'm all in. We haven't even dealt yet. Nope, I'm all in.
No, we're picking up the cards from the last hand.
So if you want to build a brand outside the leaderboards, that's a way to make a lot of money. And if, I mean, I think you probably, if you're Nike or, you know, one of these outfits, Titleist or whatever, who gives these golfers all the money. You
Encore want it, golf balls.
You want it to be somebody who does well because the perception is the equipment makes you a better golfer. But if you could also make money just by being somebody that people love for whatever reason, I don't know. It's interesting. I'd like to see this sort of thing implied here at Regional Media, where likability leads to some sort of bonus at the end of the year.
Okay.
How do you think you'd do?
Likeability wise,
yeah.
It's not my job to be likable.
Well, but if there were an impact score, I think this could be something that other businesses use. Like you get a little bonus based on how decent of a person you are, or at least what the perception is of how nice you are.
I'm a decent enough person.
You are, I know that. But there's no chance you're getting more money on a likability scale than me. I'm a Quad City sweetheart.
Easy for what you wish for.
There would be some sort of resentment on this, isn't there? Like, not you and me with the golf, where it's like, that guy's more likable than me.
I can see that.
I mean, the only thing Tiger Woods isn't going to score well on with this is his FedEx Cups point list number, because he's not going to play. Because
yeah.
He drove off a cliff because he was in a hurry to get somewhere.
He was going 140 miles an hour in a 20-mile-an-hour zone.
in a winding canyon. We're in big cat country. This guy's driving like a maniac.
He was in some sort of fighter jet on the highway.
It's not the best idea.
And he was sawing down trees.
Well, it could
be... You don't climb in with the Blue Angels and then just still stay on the road.
Golf is not, like, in terms of making a lot of money, Tiger Woods, if we're just talking on the field earnings, Tiger Woods has made about $121 million just on the field, not all the endorsement money.
That's probably the most ever.
Yes. I mean, Tiger Woods is clearly the wealthiest golfer of all time. That said, $121 million for a career
pales.
If you were to look at, like, say, baseball, he wouldn't be in the top 100 for career earnings.
Well, and it would pale compared to what he's made that wasn't actual tournament earnings.
True. Yeah,
because he's got to be a billionaire, right?
I imagine Tiger
Woods pushing it.
Yeah, you got all that money, and you can't have somebody drive you from place to place.
That's the first thing I would spend money on.
I'm done driving. Yes.
I don't care if I'm riding around in a jalopy, but I'm done driving. I mean, I can actually sit in the back at the Beverly Hillbillies thing.
Uh-huh.
I'll sit up there gladly.
In the top 10 or the top 8 or whatever, this is going to be the same guys every year, right? I mean, it seems like it's the same names. But they've got a pool of $40 million they're going to give to people who are big deals. It's an interesting idea. And the real reason they're doing this is they don't want to lose any of their top players. Like, all the big names. If the Saudis throw a bunch of money at, like, the top 20 golfers, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which you could totally do. I mean, money talks. Again, if the Saudis take away all of the talent for the PGL, which is not the PGA, that's concerning. If the PGA loses all of their superstars overnight because some sheik, you know, cuts a big check for a bazillion dollars, that's not a good,
yeah,
that's not
the
best.
Yeah, but the PGA could just basically say, well, okay, if that's the case, if you're going to go do that, then you cannot play in any of the majors. People want to play in the majors.
Yeah, that's the appeal. So if you go to the PGL, you can't be in the PGA. That's the other thing that's keeping them. You want to win a major. But we could just make our own majors. And the winner of...
Some sort of major minor.
Listen, what would you rather win? The Masters or the Saudi Open? First prize is $500 million.
Yes, please.
You see what I'm saying? Like, they could make it worth these golfers' time.
They play ball, see?
What, I got a green jacket? Pfft, I'm walking around with... I got a camel. A flying camel. His name is Kabubi. It's fantastic. I won a tournament that gave me a genie, for crying out loud.
And
little master.
Named Gene.
That's right. Like, they gave me the Gene Genie. Wham, bam, thank you, ma'am. Wait, I'm confusing my Bowie references.
It's Mean Gene, my genie.
Mean Gene Okerlund, the genie. That would be good. If you rubbed a lamp and Mean Gene Okerlund came out of it. His burger place isn't still open in Arsenal Island, is it?
Didn't he have something in a bowling alley?
Yeah,
on Brady Street?
At Bowlmore, he had a Mean Gene pizza pie. That was
still going on?
No.
No?
No. Mean Gene and all of his restaurants,
how's,
they're all quite deceased.
Five.
Number five!
Dave Prowse died back in November. Dave Prowse, a name maybe you're not familiar with, he was the guy inside the Darth Vader suit for the first three Star Wars movies.
Okay.
He was Darth Vader in the original Star Wars trilogy, Orig Tridge, as we call it.
Now, how tall a guy was he?
6'7"?
Okay, so he was good and tall.
Yeah, which you kind of need to be, right? He passed away in November, and now they are selling all of his Star Wars stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Everything that David Prowse, the guy who played Darth Vader, had, all of his Star Wars stuff getting sold off, including the script for The Empire Strikes Back, which is interesting because they didn't trust him to not blow the secret, so they gave him a alternate script that has different lines. Instead of
about
saying
the whole father thing,
yeah. Instead of saying, "Luke, I am your father," the script that they gave David Prowse says, "Luke, we will be the most powerful in the galaxy. You will have everything you could ever want. Do not resist. It is our destiny." Of course, that's not the line from the movie. The whole thing was kept a big secret.
This is all you need to know for now, until we actually shoot that scene.
Right,
you big blabbermouth.
So that script is one of the things that's up for auction. And
probably most coveted.
Well, the fact that that it's alternate dialogue, which isn't as cool as what ends up happening in the movie, but that in and of itself makes it a unique piece of Star Wars history. The script, they say, the top estimate right now, they thought it would go for a little more than $5,000. You have until May 4th to bid on all of this stuff. The top estimate was $5,500. Currently, there's a bid for more than 13 grand.
Sure.
There was also a Darth Vader mask that Prowse used to do appearances. That's up for auction. And a prop that he helped himself to from the Millennium Falcon's cockpit.
See, now, I don't...
What are you doing?
I don't...
Sticky fingers, Vader?
I don't remember that, but was that an option back in the day, early 80s or late 70s, that Darth Vader would, like, open a supermarket?
Well, yeah, he did.
Or a bank?
He did. Or he did do stuff like that.
He did?
Yeah.
Well, grand openings, he would be there?
I think so. I know that, like, Boba Fett made his debut in public in 1978 with Darth Vader at, like, a parade. Mm. And I want to say it was, like, a car dealership was opening up.
The Piggly Wiggly? And here's Darth Vader?
Yes.
Now, as far as the script is concerned, they had to do it in such a way that it didn't really give anything away.
Right.
You didn't want to put something in there that he's going to go, wait a minute, what does this mean?
Well, he ended up giving it away anyway. He got in a bunch of trouble. George Lucas hated this guy's guts because he ended up telling everybody, like,
Luke,
no, I think I'm his dad.
I will be your father. I will be your waiter.
There's a prop that was taken from the Millennium Falcon's cockpit. Also a bunch of signed posters and a photo signed by your loving son, Mark Hamill. So like Mark Hamill did an autograph for him. That's up for grabs. More than 700 items in all up for grabs.
Okay, so who was the other Darth Vader then?
Well, the voice of Darth Vader is James Earl Jones.
Yes, but as far as the person...
What do you mean?
Well, if he was the Darth Vader for the first three,
yeah.
Who's been Darth Vader for the other ones?
Well...
Do they have, like, celebrity Darth Vaders? like what they're doing with the Jeopardy right now?
So, like, in Rogue One, it was a different guy in the Darth Vader costume.
Yes.
Nobody knows who that guy is. I mean, I'm sure I could find out, but nobody knows. David Prowse is the Darth Vader. Like, so Bela Lugosi is the Frankenstein, right? A bunch of people have been Frankenstein, but when you think of Frankenstein, you're thinking of Bela Lugosi, right? Or is that even Bela Lugosi?
No, Bela Lugosi is the...
Boris Karloff.
Is Dracula. Right.
Boris Karloff is Frankenstein. I get Bela Lugosi and Boris Karloff confused.
Yeah,
it happens.
That's allowed.
I'm not going to sit here and beat myself up about it.
It's your blind spot.
He just helps himself to a prop from the... It's like an ashtray that he took out of the cockpit of the Millennium Falcon.
Well, if you got to take something.
Right now, it's...
The Millennium Falcon ashtray?
Well, but you could understand if you were...
Like to get that for Larry.
Star Wars collector, why you would want... It just looks like, yeah, it looks like a little knob or something. I don't even know how you would prove that that's... It's an original production used cockpit fitment from the Millennium Falcon. The small resin fitment being a casting from a vintage light painted silver on a resin base, painted to look like it's metal. A unique piece of Star Wars history. This is going right now for £720. That's the, what they use for money over there in England. The photo that Mark Hamill signed is going for £1,700.
I don't know about this whole idea of not giving Darth Vader credit.
Well, he got a credit. It says
he didn't. The other ones didn't.
Well, it's just that they're only like Rogue One, the guy that's Darth Vader in Rogue One.
Uh-huh.
Like Darth Vader in Rogue One is on screen for maybe a minute.
Oh.
I mean,
grown-up Darth Vader, you mean?
Yeah. Yeah, there I mean Darth Vader's barely in the movies. Like the guy that's Chewbacca now, they give him credit. I can't think of that dude's name. But I can think of Peter Mayhew. I got that off the top of my head because that was, you know, that was, mm-hmm. I loved that movie, those movies for 40 plus years. I don't know the new cat's name because, you know.
Chewbacca is a cat?
No, the guy inside the costume is a cat.
Oh.
You know.
Do you think Chewbacca is more dog or cat?
Oh, he's a dog.
Yeah.
Yeah, right? David Prowse was 6'6", not 6'7". I regret the error.
Still.
Yeah.
Tall.
Yeah, right.
Is it all over, Rock?
I guess so.
I didn't think it'd be like this.
Thank you so much for downloading, subscribing, leaving a review, and listening to Dave and Darren's top five things.
It was brought to you by Nature's Treatment of Illinois. They have a location on Tech Drive in Milan and also West Main Street in Galesburg. Milan's open every day. Galesburg's open on the weekdays. And on Saturdays, Milan offers both medicinal and recreational. Galesburg is recreational, and now you can order medicinal items online from the Milan location through Leafly at the website ntillinois.com.
Until we get a chance to do this for you again, hang loose, kooks.
And you stay classy and safe, Quad City.
Come on, Quad Cities, represent. This is for the Quad Cities record spot. Davenport, yeah, we keeping it locked. Rock out, come on, and it just don't stop. East Moline, yeah, they keeping it hot.
Bye, have a great time.